Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. In an ongoing series, we help you improve your game or improve the game of others. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket at Millfield School, is Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Marvellous news. And secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hi, David.
And Lavers, this week you have...
Okay, essentially the article is by Pete Langman. It's on
runouts.
Crick Info. And what he's doing is just drawing a comparison
between
fielding or throwing standards in cricket with fielding throwing standards in baseball. I think we'd all agree that
situation.
What we see in baseball when we do watch it, and I'm sure some of us do, is... the standard of throwing is very, very high. And his title that he's used is Let's Make Runouts Mundane. And I think that's a really good description sometimes of what happens in baseball. Not that the game is mundane, but you can find a very casual bit of fielding, which is an extremely high level of performance, but is done very relaxed manner. Which would be a jog across to a ball, a pick-up, a 70-yard throw, which is an absolute bullet at head height all the way, straight into a mitt, running someone out by a couple of inches, and it's all very accepted or expected as what will happen, and that is the norm. And it's an incredibly high level of skill and athleticism and all those kinds of things, but in cricket the comparison would be that it's probably a little bit more panicky. Am I throwing which end? Am I throwing at all? I've got to pick the ball up first. Maybe there's a little bit more panic in that because I've not got a nice big mitt on my hand. Am I throwing bowler's end, batter's end? Am I throwing at the base of the stumps? Am I throwing over the top of the stumps? Is the guy on the stumps or are they having to kind of find a way of getting it to him and then to the stumps? There are a few more variables going on the cricket side of things. But basically he's saying, look, when there's a run-out opportunity in baseball, it's pretty chilled out because it's so rehearsed and practiced, whereas where it's in cricket, it is a little bit less calm a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time. Is that because it is less rehearsed and practiced, or why is that? And what are the comparisons between the two and the way they operate? And that's what we can chat about for a few minutes, I suppose.
Yeah, and the sort of conclusion that he comes to is to play the percentages more and throw the ball to the wicketkeeper as sort of the standard default thing. Don't worry about the direct hit to the non-striker's end. Just throw the ball to the person who's most likely to be there wearing the gloves and is most likely to be able to execute the run out because they've practiced it the most. Which makes logical sense, I suppose. It does simplify things quite a lot. And in a situation which is quite dynamic, like a run-out, sometimes the simplest answer is the best answer. Gareth, what do you think? Is it that simple, or can we do something a little bit more complex without ruining the chances of getting a run-out?
Well, I like the idea of the most practiced person or the best person being at the stumps, and obviously at the keeper's end, you'd hope that was a wicketkeeper. But equally, I've played in sides where I've been fielding at point and the best person to take the bails off isn't the wicketkeeper because it would have been me. I'm very keen to get people that have got good skill levels at both sets of stumps, and I've talked about bowler's end wicketkeepers a lot. So if I was fielding at straight mid wicket or a straight extra cover and the ball went out on the opposite side of the ground, then do I want Monty Panesar at the bowler's end stumps, or do I want somebody who's very good with his hands? So I'd go in there instead. And that's the same for, you know, I think the best teams do that anyway, naturally. So that's something that you can work out at club level, and a lot of this article is geared around the lower levels of the game, isn't it? Which is fantastic, but those principles, you'll know in your side who's got the best hands to be able to take a half volley or a ball pitching just in front, or to be able to take a full toss from the from the boundary and whip the bales off at the bowler's end. So rather than having this stereotypical, oh, the bowler gets back to the stumps, let's get the best person there. So that's first thing. And second thing, it is down to practice. And that's where American sport and set plays are really then manifest themselves in the way that people practice. And I do agree with Sam that there are probably a few more variables in terms of making a direct run out or an assisted run out in cricket. But actually, you know, how many times do we set play practice? It's something that I've really driven here, because often the run outs that we get are repeatable. I mean, they're the similar types of run outs every time. So where do we get the run outs? We get them either side of a field or in the inner ring, to both ends, where we can practice that with or without a runner going against us, because we know what the rough times of people running between the wickets going to be. So if we can, from ball strike, get the ball back to the stumps in a shorter period of time than somebody's likely to run, then we're going to be doing a good job and getting a run out. So we can practice that. The same thing for running, you know, hitting a ball and trying to get a two. We know what the times are for that. So even if we haven't got any runners there, we could be practicing our set plays and then increasing challenge and increasing pressure by putting a runner in there to make it competitive towards the end of a session. But I don't see enough of that going on. I always talk about, when I do level threes and level fours in fielding, coach education courses, that we spend a lot of the time doing funky fielding drills, when actually we could be doing some pretty functional practice around time and around competition, which is, you know, it seems a bit old school, but ultimately, you know, if you can run somebody out 9 times out of 10 when they're within the time allowance, you know, for a run too, then you're more likely to be able to achieve that in a game as well.
I guess it depends on how we kind of look at the article. Are we taking that as something that we think applies to everyone or not? I think what I mentioned before, probably off air slightly, was that yes, there are more variables. It's probably something that suits a level of cricket where we're trying to simplify, because we're trying to get away from mistakes rather than trying to improve our way away from mistakes, if you know what I mean. So rather than, if we've got something that's not working, we're trying to take it away rather than fix it. And at certain levels of cricket, that might work, and it might be that if we're somewhere in the lower half of the cricket pyramid, by reducing the amount of decisions that have to be made, and simplifying the skill process, because it's always going in one direction, it's always we're removing that panic because we know what we're doing. We're not having to think about it too much. Then maybe this is something that's effective, and maybe that we just go one way, it will work. And I guess the proof will be in the pudding. Someone out there will try it, and someone will come out with some stats that say it does work, and someone else will come out with some stats that say it doesn't work. I like to think that our method of improvement is just that, is we're trying to improve. So if there is a weakness, and if our weakness is we panic, or our weakness is we don't make good decisions, or we don't hit the stumps often enough, then we improve our way out of that situation rather than kind of closing that avenue off. And for some people, they simply won't have the time or the commitment or the availability of practice facilities or whatever to ever do any practice on this, in which case this might be the way forward for them. But for most of us, a little bit of time is all we need to throw a ball and to think about how we're going to aim it and think about the decisions we're going to make, and maybe even pre-plan a little bit of the decisions in a game, because we'll have an idea of which enemy we're going to throw to. And for those, hopefully, I'd say majority, we can come out of a weakness in a positive way by improving it rather than stopping it completely.
To me, it's a good article, which is quite thought-provoking, which I think is the reason why the guy wrote it. I've got some in from it, I've got some ideas from it, and that's a good article to me. You know, whether you agree with it all or not is another thing, but if it makes your mind wander and makes you reflect back on your practice and can you do it slightly differently or better, then it's a pretty good article in my book. So yeah, thank you very much, Pete.
Yeah, definitely. It's if it stops and makes you think. And even if you think and come to the conclusion that actually the way I have been doing it is fine, thanks very much, then at least you've had that moment of reflection, haven't you? And, you know, action and reflection are very closely tied to each other, aren't they? So it's always a good thing.
Right, so three jobs up this week. First one, it's a local one for me, actually. It is a cricket analyst position, which is over at the Aegeus Bowl, which is where Hampshire play. That will be something that I think is a voluntary position. It's like an internship, but that'll be working alongside the first team and the second 11. Next one up is commercial director at the PCA. So obviously a big role there, big commercial company these days. So anyone who has got some sporting commercial experience, ideally with cricket, I'm sure they would like, but otherwise would be really interesting to kind of speak to them. Would be included. And then finally, we've got an operations manager slash head coach, which is out in Hong Kong. Anyone who's in the area or looking to move abroad or looking to get some experience elsewhere, this could be a really good opportunity for you to develop either as a coach or from the management point of view, which has obviously got a bit of a crossover with there.
Time now for the question section on the show. Now here we do exactly what it says on the tin. We answer some questions about playing or coaching cricket that have been sent in by listeners to this very show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll tell you about other ways to get in touch with us towards the end of the show. But the first question this week is from the mysteriously named Q. That's all the information he gave us. So we can have a little guess on what Q stands for. But while we do that, let's find out what the question is. And Q says, "Hi, I started working out about 6 months ago, and my original reason was to buff up. But for the last month or so, I've been looking to work out to be a fit, fast bowler. So I was wondering if my workout plan is good for a 13-year-old pace bowler. He's given his workout plan. I won't go into full details, but the way he's done it is he's broken his week down onto his rest days, and then each day he's put what body parts he's going to be working on. And he's asking if the plan is a good plan. You chaps have seen that plan, so I won't go into full details because it's it's an overwhelming amount of information, I suppose. But you've seen that and you've got the idea of it. So I guess, what do you think about that particular plan that he's come up with, and how can we help him improve on it?"
The first thing I would say is there isn't necessarily a good plan and a bad plan. There are things that work for people and there are things that don't work for people. And there are general guidelines that you will have, which you'll probably start with when you're working with an athlete or a cricketer. And you'll probably then just adjust things as you go along, based on the kind of success you get and how it fits with an individual. So I'm not going to say it's a bad plan for you. I'm not going to say it's a good plan for you. It's a good thing that you're obviously very keen on it and you're aware that fitness plays a big part in what you're doing. So well done to you for that. But beyond that, I'd say there is a lot going on. Thinking about what I did when I was 13, I wasn't doing this. Maybe I should have been, I'm not sure. But I think there's a lot going on there, and I think it probably could be simplified a little bit. Again, I'm talking generally, I'm not saying specifically to you because I don't know you as an athlete or a cricketer. But the general thing I would look to do is have some kind of cardiovascular base, which a lot of guys at 13 who play lots of sport are pretty strong at. So that's something that's often covered to a certain degree already. A lot of what you've done is, obviously, you said you wanted to buff up and then you transferred that into want to be better at cricket, and I wanted to have an impact on how I will operate as a pace bowler. So I'd be thinking about, can I have some stuff which is some lower body strength work in there? So simple squatting and lunging is more than enough, and we won't get much more complicated than squatting and lunging. Maybe some of the older guys do some general deadlifting, but variations on those kind of exercises are more than good enough. Then upper body wise, we're looking for a bit of strength, but also a bit of power as well, generally. And there are a variety of things we can do there, from all kinds of things, whether they're body weight exercises like pull-ups or things like that, or they're med ball exercises where we're trying to generate some power, or their slams, but we're trying to get a little bit of upper body work in. We're trying to get a bit of rotational work in as well, which is pretty important to cricket. So I would be thinking about, first of all, does this fit into my life? Is this allowing me to do enough cricket and skill work and bowling and those kind of things, which I wouldn't say are more important, but are very important. And I don't want to block off my opportunities to bowl and develop those skills with because I'm doing so much work on my fitness. Secondly, I would generally keep an exercise plan fairly simple in comparison, and we're lucky that we've got an S&C coach here with us who's more the specialist, and I oversee the process, but he's a Marcus Campopiano, who's the best named specialist S&C specialist in the world, I think. He looks after us, and still his things are very simple. It's a bit of upper and lower body power and a bit of rotational stuff and a bit of balance work. And it's all something that's hopefully going to have an impact on making you faster. Now, if we were to go through your sessions, we could pick out bits and pieces, which are all very valuable. Again, more naming body parts than actual things you're doing in your plan, so it's difficult to know what you're doing, but look, does it fit into your lifestyle? Is it measurable? Are you getting better? They're the first things I'd say, and also don't overdo it. Enjoy your fitness, enjoy your cricket. Don't start doing more than you can handle, because your body's going to be growing. It's going to want a breather at some stage. So you're going to have to be aware that this isn't probably something that you shouldn't be doing 52 weeks of the year, 365 days, etc.
And the specific question that I wanted to ask was about that transfer between the gym and the stuff that you're doing in the gym, and the stuff that you're doing when you're out on the field actually bowling the ball. And so things that Stephen Jones has been banging the drum for is things like throwing medicine balls and weighted ball bowling. Where do you stand on that generally, and also where do you stand on that with a younger bowler who, you know, is still developing?
I quite like the overweight, underweight principle. And I've liked it. Steph introduced it to me years ago, actually. And then through a bit more research, through looking at baseball in particular around throwing and also hitting of different weights of ball, I thought the best bit about it is, yes, it's functional. It is going to work the body in slightly different ways. But more importantly, it's quite good fun. And I think one of the great things about fitness is that it's got to be fun in order for people to keep coming back and doing it. You know, there are, out of everybody that I work with, you get the guys that do it because it's going to help performance first and foremost, fantastic. But actually, most people do it when there's an element of fun put alongside it. And you know, whacking a heavy ball or bowling a heavy ball is quite a good challenge, isn't it? Because you're doing what your body wants to do, i.e. play the sport that you're doing. And it's certainly easier to get people to do stuff through sport than it is necessarily to get them to push weights around or to do some sort of strength and conditioning stuff. So I'm a massive fan of it, and I think it helps those that have got a bit of aversion to the gym to actually start feeling what training can do for them, and then you can introduce the gym stuff alongside it. But I'm a big fan of it, mate. I did some this morning with spinners, and I think it's good.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I've seen great results from heavy ball bowling, especially. And there's always a medicine ball knocking around at our nets now, just to encourage the guys to chuck one around a little bit.
And it's a great way of getting them to understand how to produce power, how to get something to go away from you with speed, isn't it? So even, you know, chucking a medicine ball from a batting stance into a power hitting position, it is good because it stresses the body a little bit. You know that you've got to get your sequencing within your body to work really well in order to get that big heavy ball to fly away from you at a decent rate of knots. So again, you're learning how to produce power, and ultimately a lot of our game is about that. And if we get a good understanding of that through doing it rather than just through being able to talk about it, all the better.
Okay, Q, hope that helps you. Good luck with that, and say hello to Bond for us. Next question is from Sukhdeep, but far more traditional name. Sukhdeep has a problem which he wants to ask us about. He says, I have one problem that stops me achieving my dreams. My biggest weakness is when I enter into a cricket ground, I'm totally down on myself. Suddenly, my confidence that was full before the match comes to zero. When I face deliveries in that situation, I react too early to the ball and completely fail to time the ball. In the case of bowling, I'm very good. My confidence is always good. But I always wanted to contribute to the team with the bat, and I always fail. Can you please give me some tips that can help me in the future?
Well, yeah, I can give you a few. Welcome to my world would be the first the first thing I'll say, because I had exactly the same thing in my playing career. Rarely, if pretty much never, would I experience any anxiety around my wicket-keeping. It was always something that I felt fairly comfortable with and certainly looked forward to, and didn't have that anxiety that you've talked about there. But like yourself, I would often, when playing a level of cricket that I felt that was really challenging to me, I would walk into bat picturing myself nicking it to slip. So I totally get it. And I think if I look back on those days, the thing that would have helped me most, and if somebody presents like you are now, you're obviously able to manage yourself appropriately, because, you know, in your bowling you feel very confident. So can you write down what those feelings of confidence feel like, what those pictures in your head look like, what those self-talk words that you put alongside your bowling sound like inside your head? Because it's a pretty internal thing, isn't it? But can you actually write those down? And then on maybe a bit of paper that's folded in half, on the other side of the paper, repeat the process, but from a batting point of view as well. And just see what different experiences, what different thoughts and what different self-talk is going through your system as you're entering the arena to do your two different disciplines. And obviously then you can have a look at how those compare and contrast, and you can start to overlay some of the words from your bowling into your batting. You could maybe pick up that your breathing is more controlled when you're looking to bowl than it is when you're looking to bat, and if that's the case, then we can do some work on controlling your breathing to help reduce that anxiety, because that's something that is proven to work really well. You know, that centering approach, that belly breathing is a fantastic way to drop down your anxiety levels. And often when we are feeling anxious, everything is going quickly, and you described that you play the ball too quickly. Well, often our mind is going at 500 miles an hour, so can we find a way of using our bowling experience to calm our mind, maybe some of the same self-talk, using our breathing, having a different picture inside the head will calm that mind down, and as a result our actions will become less frenetic. Our ability to want to get at that ball will become less frenetic, and hopefully your performances will drop. But bottom line is, because you can do it in batting, if you practice it, sorry, bowling, if you practice it enough mentally, then with breathing, with some visualization, with transferring some of those positive words that you're putting across in your bowling across into your batting, and obviously underpin that with some practice in the nets and in drills to increase your competence as a batter, then there's no reason why you can't do what I didn't do and manage to balance out your game, your confidence game, a bit better across your two disciplines.
One of the things that really helped me to recognise that situation and deal with it is to know that the thoughts that you have are not what's happening. The thoughts that you have are your reaction to what's happening. And those thoughts aren't you. Those thoughts aren't good or bad. They're not right or wrong. They're just your reaction to something. And that reaction can be helpful or it can be not very helpful. It can hurt you in some way. So as soon as you recognize that you aren't your thoughts and your thoughts can either help you or hurt you, then you can change your thoughts. And if you can change your thoughts by some of the methods that you were talking about there, Gareth, then you can feel a lot more in control and accept what's happening and then deal with it in a more detached way, if you like, to stop the emotions getting in the way so much and focus on doing what you want to do and achieving what you want to achieve, and remembering that those thoughts are separate from the actions that are happening. So that's one thing that helped me a lot. And I always, if I help see guys who are getting that anxiety as well, you know, recognizing that it is something that is not the action itself, but something that is a reaction to the action, that really helps people, I find. And that is the end of the show for another week. There is one more thing that we're going to do before we leave, and that is to decide on the winner of the competition. Of course, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is on offer. And the two people vying for the prize are Q and his question about strength training, and Sukhdeep's question about his anxiety and his confidence. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Sukhdeep's one because I think it happens to loads of people. It certainly happened to me. So I thought we answered it pretty well. So good all round. Well done, everybody.
Well done, everyone. Yeah, good mutual backslap. Well done. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to have their chance to win the prize, what would they need to do to get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. There's also social media. There's Pitch Vision. You can get us through the system there by using the messaging system in the top right-hand side of pitchvision.com. Or you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Or you can find us on Twitter as well. It's @pitchvisionacad there. If you want to listen to the show, then you can do that by subscribing. Go to your favourite podcast app. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, tap on the subscribe button, and away you go. You can do that in any device that you have that's got a connection to the internet and a podcast app. And if you want to do it in the old-fashioned way, then you can go to our website. You can go to there and see all the previous show notes, download the show, stream it from your browser, all that fun stuff. And go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys. Bye.